is actually a segue into my drash for the morning. I first want to ask a question. There is a phrase in the book of Isaiah that is used three times. Ram v'nisa. Ram v'nisa. Translated possibly as high and lifted up. High and lifted up. Ram v'nisa is used three times in Isaiah. Who in Isaiah is high and lifted up? Any guesses? What? The Lord, yes. For instance, in chapter 6, this guy named Yeshayahu is going about his regular priestly duties. He's working in the temple. Evidently, he's a priest. But something happens on a particular day that's out of the ordinary. Suddenly, he has a vision, an appearance of the Most High, whose glory fills the sanctuary. And we are told that the Lord, Ram v'nisa, high and lifted up, fills the sanctuary. And there, Isaiah has a very significant encounter with the Most High. Ram v'nisa, Isaiah chapter 6. Who else in Isaiah, the book of Isaiah, is high and lifted up? Another time that the Most High has this phrase, high and lifted up, is in chapter 57 of Isaiah. 57:15, which states, this is what the high and lifted up one says. Again, Ram v'nisa, 57:15. This is what the high and lifted up one says. The one who Shochein Ad. We have a prayer by that name in our Siddur. The one who dwells forever, the one whose name is holy, he says, I dwell on high in holiness, but also with the one who is contrite and lowly in spirit, reviving the spirit of the lowly, reviving the heart of the contrite. So in other words, God says, the high and lifted up one says, I dwell on high, but I also dwell really low. I can get real high and I can get real low. God transcends himself. There's all kinds of theologians like to have that great debate. Is God close or is God far away? And usually, depending on one's religious experience or mystic perspective, they usually have extremes one way or the other. But I love the presence of both at the same time. The high and lifted up one says, I also dwell in the lowest places with the one who has a broken, a low, a contrite heart. There is one other time in the book of Isaiah where this phrase Ram v'nisa appears. It is said in Isaiah chapter 52. And believe it or not, now I can't find it in my... Oh, there it is. Verse 13, Isaiah chapter 52, verse 13. My servant will prosper. Ram v'nisa, my servant will prosper the high and exalted. And just as many were appalled at him, so marred was his appearance, unlike that of a man, that he will startle many nations. Kings will be silenced because of him, for they will see what they have not, for they will see what has not been told them, shall behold what they have never heard. Who can believe what we have heard? And upon whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? Here, the servant of the Lord is expressed in Isaiah chapter 52 and chapter 53, one who is Ram Venisa, high and lifted up. Suddenly, the Ram Venisa, the lifted up one who is exalted, is not only the Most High of Isaiah chapter 6 and Isaiah chapter 57, but in Isaiah 52, the high and lifted up one is the arm of the Lord, the Zoroah Adonai. I've taught before, I believe it is can be thoroughly demonstrated that for Isaiah, the arm of the Lord is none other than Messiah. And to say it even more clearly, none other than Messiah Yeshua is the arm of the Lord, the servant of the Lord, who is, did you catch it? High and lifted up. Not only the Most High, but his servant is high and lifted up. Yeshua, the arm of the Lord, is lifted up. He is exalted. He is high, like the Most High himself. Now, having set that amazing background, which in itself is amazing to ponder and reflect on, the not only the majesty of the Most High, but the fact that Messiah Yeshua reflects and has that same majesty. As so is often true, what is said of the Most High, God himself, is also said of Yeshua. And so, with this in mind, listen to this week's reading from the Besorah in John chapter 12. Yeshua said, verse 32, "And as I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw everyone to myself." Again, verse 32 from John 12, "As I am lifted up from the earth, so I will draw everyone to myself." So often, we think of Messiah being lifted up as, and properly so, as his execution. He is, in this passage, speaking of his death. He's speaking of his execution. He's hinting at the way he knows he will be executed, that is, by crucifixion, that ghastly form of suffering that the Romans perpetrated on all of their enemies. Ghastly because the Romans, in their heartless style, at one time, Josephus tells us, executed 1,000 at once. And so Yeshua was pointing to his death. He was saying, "I will be lifted up and draw all people to me." But yet, Yeshua is saying something more than that. He's not only pointing to the way he will die, he is pointing to his exalting. He's pointing to that the fact that he is the one who is high. He is the one who is lifted up. Ram Venisa. By the way, this in the book of John, this idea of Yeshua being lifted up is actually used three times in the book of John. It also occurs back in chapter 8. Yeshua there also says, I will be glorified. I will be lifted up. Yeshua, in his death, is lifted up. He is both humiliated in his death and he is exalted in his death at the same time. At the same time that he is humiliated in his death on the tree, he is lifted up. He draws all to himself because he is the one that is high. He is the one who is exalted. Yeshua is exalted and humiliated at the same time. Which is an amazing idea. Yeshua takes things and he flips them on their heads. And what is meant for degradation, what is meant for humiliation, he turns into a fulfillment of Isaiah's hope that Yeshua would be high and lifted up. The servant becomes high and lifted up at the very moment that he is humiliated beyond description, marred, disfigured, all those images that Isaiah 53 gives us. There's a couple other things that's interesting here about John chapter 12. Beginning with verse 20, it says, now there were some Greeks. I tend to go along with a local scholar here in town by the name of Craig Keener, who argues that these are not Jewish Greeks. These are at least non-Jews who have are in the process, perhaps, of becoming Jews, of becoming proselytes to Judaism. It's what at times are referred to as God-fearers. They're not Greek-speaking Jews. They are non-Jewish Greeks. They come to Philip and they say, we want to see Yeshua. And so Philip goes and he tells his brother Andrew, and Andrew and Philip come and they tell Yeshua. By the way, I love this guy named Philip. He's the only one of Yeshua's followers who has a Greek name. Maybe that's why the Greeks come to Philip. They feel comfortable with him. Philip grew up in a town on the Kinneret, which was near a Greek-populated area called the Decapolis. Another thing interesting about Philip is that each time he appears in the Bessara, in the narratives of Yeshua, he is always bringing somebody to Yeshua. The only time Philip shows up in the stories, he's bringing somebody to Messiah. What a great role to play. If that's all we ever do, that would be enough. So they come, they want to see Yeshua. But Yeshua answers them. We're not given their question. We're not told what they ask Yeshua. But based on what Yeshua says in response, I think they say something like, are you really the king of Israel? Are you the king of the whole earth? We want to make you our king. The crowd has just seen Lazarus raised from the dead. And we know at other points that when Yeshua did something dramatic, the crowds immediately want to install Yeshua as the prince, as the king, to rule over them. Yeshua says, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified, but not in the way they presume, glorified as in Ram V'nisa, to be lifted up. He says, amen, I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls to the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it produces much fruit. Usually, this is actually a famous statement of Yeshua. He says it three or four times through all his sayings. But only here does it refer to himself. Usually it refers to his disciples. Here he's referring to himself, his own death. Unless a piece of grain dies and is buried, it won't produce anything. But if it dies and is buried, it will sprout and it will come to life and it will produce a harvest. He says, he who loves his life will lose it, and the one who hates his life in this world will keep it forever. If anyone serves me, he must follow me, and where I am, there will my servant also be. If anyone serves me, my Father will honor him. Yeshua, speaking of his own death, also refers to those who will follow him, those who will serve him. It also reminds me of the story of Ruth. We read it just earlier this week on Sunday. We read about Ruth's proclamation of trust, of dedication, first to the people of Israel, and then secondly to the God of Israel. It's always interesting that when evangelical circles, when someone comes to Messiah, they pledge their faith to the Most High, to follow Messiah. But never have I heard someone in such a prayer be encouraged to say, well, I'll also follow the people of Israel. But Ruth did. Ruth said, I will go with the people of Israel, and I will also go with the God of Israel. I will go where you are. And the Messiah takes this idea of going with him, just as Ruth told Naomi, I will go with you. Messiah says, my servants, those who choose to follow me, as Ruth had chosen to follow Naomi, will go with me, and they will be where I am. They will be where I am. In fact, they may have to lose their life like I will lose my life. And Ruth had said that as well to Naomi, where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Then Yeshua throws in this great line. In verse 26, he says, if anyone serves me, the Father will honor him. The Father will exalt. The Father will lift up whoever serves me. You know, I said a moment ago that that this congregation has a real serving heart. And I applaud you, and we've built that heart, and we will continue to do that. It will continue to grow, is my prayer. There is great joy in being God's servant. There's another place in that Messiah said that the reward for serving him is that itself. The reward for serving Messiah is the ability to serve Messiah. We are not to look for external pats on the back. I remember when I was, actually at my grandmother's funeral, back in the 90s, I was just barely over 20 years old, and I had decided that I wanted to become a congregational leader, and I remember my aunt saying, oh, so you want to go into ministry? She said, is that where the money's at? And I was like, I was so shocked, I didn't even know what to say. First of all, it was at my grandmother's funeral, and so I didn't know if I felt like being sarcastic or making a joke. I didn't know if she was making a joke, but the look on her face told me that it wasn't a joke she was making. And it really said more about her than it said about the question she was asking me. She was revealing more about her than she really wanted to know about me. So I made no response at all. And then I think a little embarrassed, she said, well, maybe it is. And the topic went on in another direction. My point is, those that serve the Lord do so because they have a heart to serve the Lord. And if you are a follower of Messiah, you are in that same place. You may not, I actually have a business card that after my name it says congregational leader. But I'm a servant just like you. My job, in fact, according to the Besara, is to equip you to serve. I'm a servant to you. I'm a servant to enable you to serve. That's what I do. Ephesians chapter 4 is where that instruction comes from. So we are all fellow servants together. Again, just like me, we're not in this for externals. We're in this to bring honor and to the Most High, because we want to follow Messiah. But again, catch that note. It says, whoever serves me, my Father will honor. We serve God not to get accolades from others, even if it's upfront things. I'm not here to just so you can look at me. I'm here to have a heart for God. So rather we have I won't go there. But we all serve together, and God honors us. We are all created to serve. A few weeks ago, my message was about Melchizedek from the book of Hebrews, chapter 7. Melchizedek is only mentioned about 3 times in the Bible. The total number of verses is only like about 20 verses. But yet, it's an amazing story about a priest who, in the book of Hebrews, is compared to Yeshua. And although Yeshua is not a Cohen, he's not from the tribe of Levi, we're told that Yeshua is a priest because he lives forever. He's a priest not because of his ancestry, but because of his indestructible life. He is a priest forever. And I can't summarize that whole teaching, So we simply, in this context, recognize that Yeshua is our priest. We have the opportunity to serve the high priest. We are servants of our priest. Now, think back to the Torah portion that we just read. Gail read the first 7 or 8 verses from this week's Torah portion, Nasol. Nasol is the name of this week's Torah portion. By the way, what does the verb, what does Nasol mean? To lift. Thank you, our Hebrew scholar. Nasa is the verb to lift. In your translation of Numbers chapter 4, it probably says, take a sum, take a count of all the Levites from the tribe or from the clan of Gershon. But actually, it's not the regular number that means count. It doesn't actually say count. It actually says lift, elevate. Elevate all of the Gershonites, all the Levites from the clan, the family of Gershon, and give them their duties. Give them their responsibilities. Elevate them. Lift them up so that they can do their duties. And specifically, it says later in the text that they can perform their duties, get this, for Aaron and his sons. Who was Aaron? Aaron was the high priest. Aaron was the high priest. In other words, the Levites are elevated, lifted, raised up in order to serve the high priest. In fact, Gail used that verb, serve, in... Well, the Torah portion begins in Numbers chapter 4, verse 21. The verb to serve showed up in verse 23, verse 24, verse 26, verse 27, verse 28. The word to serve showed up in more than every other verse that Gail read to us today. My point is, the reason that the Gershonites, those of the clan of Gershon from the tribe of Levi, were elevated was so that they could serve, specifically so that they could serve the high priest. Okay? They're, by the way, their tasks included all the tapestries, the soft goods, the curtains into the entrance of the Mishkan, the curtain that divided the holy place from the most holy place, the layers of curtains. There were about 4 layers of curtains on the roof of the Mishkan. They were the ones responsible after the Kohats had gone in and removed all the furniture. They went in and took down all the soft goods. And then their cousins from the clan of Merari came in and took down the boards, the planks, the wood. And so here are the Gershonites. Their job was very specific. In fact, the book of Numbers even describes that each one individually had a particular role, even down to person by person. And they had someone who would oversee what they did, Itamar, who was one of Aaron's sons. By the way, in the Septuagint, he is called an overseer. an overseer. The Greek word in the Septuagint is actually where we get the English word bishop. By the way, bishops just weren't invented by the church in church history. They existed before Yeshua. In fact, they existed in the Torah. By the way, so did apostles and deacons, and so all those offices, by the way, aren't Christian. They're actually Jewish. Isn't that interesting? The Gershonites were appointed to the high priest to be servants. Now let's go back to John chapter 12. John chapter 12, verse 26. If any person serves me, here Yeshua is speaking, and I've already argued that Yeshua is the high priest. Yeshua is the Kohen Hagadol. If anyone serves me, he must follow me, and where I am, there also my servant will be. If anyone serves me, the Father will honor him. The Father will exalt him. Let me assert that here in John chapter 12, we have an amazing, beautiful application of our Torah portion. There were three families of Levites, and each family had a very specific task. In fact, as I said, it's hinted in the book of Numbers that each person even has a specific task. And their job was to serve Aaron and his sons, to serve the high priest. And so it is for us as well. We are servants. If you know Messiah, as I argued, it's not just myself, it's not just the other leaders in our congregation, those who lead in the liturgy, those that read Torah, those that lead the Torah study, those are not the servants. We are all servants. We are created to serve. We are created to serve Yeshua, our high priest. We carry out and carry on that role like the Levites. We're serving our high priest. We serve Yeshua. And we're told, Yeshua said, and if anybody serves me, my Father will honor him. What did the Torah portion say? Lift up, elevate, not just count. Oh, it applies that in the context. But the word is to elevate, raise up, elevate, cause one to be exalted. The Levites who would serve the high priest. It was an elevated, it was an exalted role. Which, by the way, when we get to chapter 16 of the book of Numbers, we'll scratch our heads and we'll wonder, what is wrong with Korah? Who has this exalted, elevated state, but yet he's so dissatisfied. And we'll have to discuss what's going on with Korah. One of the Levites that's not happy being in that exalted, elevated place. Yeshua says that the Father elevates those that serve the high priest. Those that serve Yeshua are raised up, are elevated, are honored, they are exalted alongside Yeshua. Yeshua is Ram V'Nisa, high and exalted. Those that choose to serve the exalted priest will be lifted up also. In conclusion, let me point to one of my favorite psalms. It's Psalm 113. It's the beginning of the Hallel Psalms. Mozart has an amazing choral rendition, if you ever get a chance to hear it. In Psalm 113, it says, "The Lord dwells in a high, in an exalted place. But he also looks over and he sees those that are lowly, and he raises them up." It's the same verb. It says God is raised up to a high place, but he also raises up those that are in his sight. He raises up those that he looks at. God is not protective of his little position. God isn't out looking out for his own interest. God looks out for our interest. And what God does, what God is, he does for us. God is raised up to a high place, and so he raises up, he exalts, he lifts others because he is lifted up. What a beautiful thought. We are raised up like the Levites to serve our high priest. There's one more thought in this week's Torah portion about being lifted up. It's from chapter 6 of the book of Numbers. It says, "May the Lord lift up his face and shine on you and give you peace." God lifts up and honors those that will serve him.